The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We're continuing our discussion about the unaccounted for gaps. We have been talking about the problem of trying to dream up some method in which the universe in which we find ourselves living could have come from nothing. And we have been looking at comments from a variety of evolutionists. Most of them are unregenerate men, people that have not trusted the Lord as Savior. One I'm not certain about. One perhaps is a saved man. There's a man, an article that appeared in Scientific American, May of 1984. It was written by Alan H. Guth and Paul J. Steinhardt. And the article was entitled The Inflationary Universe. Now, the inflationary universe and the Big Bang are not the same thing exactly. One can be included within the other. And as I have observed, I'm not intending to go through in detail all of the present varieties of ideas of the nature of the universe. But this phrase occurs in the quote, and for those of you that may be interested, this is the reason I made that explanatory comment. Now, the quote is this, quote, from an historical point of view, probably the most revolutionary aspect of the inflationary model is the notion that all the matter and energy in the observable universe may have emerged from almost nothing. Now, for those of you that may not be aware of the Big Bang Theory, presumably all of the matter that we have in the universe at the beginning was compressed down to the size of something like a pinhead. And then for reasons that are totally unknown, it began to expand, had an unbelievable explosion. It blew all the matter of our universe out into place. I hope it goes without saying that this view is absolutely unscientific. We do not have any scientific information that would allow the basis of such a view. But it is an example of the kinds of answers that men are going to come up with in an effort to try and provide some sort of satisfactory position without being willing to recognize that our universe was created by God. Now, there are several comments by Stephen Hawking. If you know much of anything about the evolutionist creationist fuss or theoretical certain areas of theoretical physics or for other reasons, you may be familiar with Stephen Hawking. He is an immensely intelligent individual. He is paralyzed most of his body. He gets around in an electric wheelchair, which he is able to control with buttons. He is a blatant unbeliever, and because of his contributions to science, because of his vitality in spite of his affliction, and because of his outspoken comments, he is well known around the world. And he makes some comments again that I feel are worth our giving some attention to. There was one of his books was entitled A Brief History of Time. This came out in 1988. And in the foreword to that, Hawking makes this comment, quote, I was again fortunate in that I chose theoretical physics because that is all in the mind. So my disability has not been a serious handicap, end quote. Now that statement is worth noting. Theoretical physics does not have to do with experiments. They're not the kind of thing that you could go into the laboratory or somewhere out in nature and perform experiments to gain information from. Theoretical physics is all in the mind. I am not decrying theoretical physics. I think it has its place. It has been the basis of the development of a variety of things that many of us benefit from, some knowingly, some not knowingly. But the fact remains, it is simply mental constructs. And it's important that a person understand that ahead of time. Now, in the foreword, there was a comment made about Hawking, which I want to note, I want to use, I want you to give some thought to. Quote, Hawking embarks on a quest to answer Einstein's famous question about whether God had any choice in creating the universe. Hawking is attempting, as he explicitly states, to understand the mind of God. And this makes all the more unexpected the conclusion of the effort, at least so far. A universe with no edge in space, no beginning or end in time, and nothing for the Creator to do, end quote. Now, this statement, this purpose to understand the mind of God, my response to that is unbelievable arrogance. The only way any finite human being is going to have knowledge of God, or God's mind for that matter, is to have God reveal that in some way. Now, apart from a revelation from God, humans are not going to know anything about Him, at least certainly not doctrinal things. Now, we've talked through the idea that we can look around in nature and see His creation, and from that know two things about Him. We can look at the creation and know, one, that there is a Creator, and two, we can know He's a powerful Creator. And as Paul indicates there in Romans 1, the end of the verse says, so that they are without excuse. There has never been a single person who is going to stand in judgment before God one day and shake his finger under God's nose and say, I never knew anything about you. God's going to say, you saw the sun come up in the morning. You saw it go down at night. You saw the order and pattern in nature. And all of that is sufficient to make you without excuse insofar as this demonstrates the necessity of a Creator. That order and pattern, that regularity, those details, that complexity that you see in nature is sufficient to establish the fact that there had to be a Creator. And secondly, He is a powerful Creator. Now, it is possible even for an unregenerate man to look at nature and come to that conclusion. Now, how Hawking has managed to do that without arriving at that conclusion, I don't know. I would say, and it's not my intention to be unkind, but if you have highly intelligent people who look around in nature and see all that's here and can't figure out that it was created, then I would suggest you be very cautious in accepting much of anything else they want to tell you. If they're going to come to the wrong conclusion about this, one of the most important possible decisions in life, then it is not likely they're going to be trustworthy about other things as well. Now, in any event, this was Hawking's stated purpose. And part of the conclusion was simply that you have a universe that had no beginning, no end, and there's no point in a Creator. So therefore, there wasn't one. And you can deal with the reasoning behind that as you choose. Now, a quote from this book on page 42. Now, at first sight, all of this evidence that the universe looks the same whichever direction we look in might seem to suggest there is something special about our place in the universe. In particular, it might seem, if we observe all the other galaxies to be moving away from us, then we must be at the center of the universe. There is, however, an alternate explanation. The universe might look the same in every direction, as seen from every other galaxy, too. This, as we have seen, was Friedman's second assumption. We have no scientific evidence for or against this assumption. We believe it only on grounds of modesty. It would be remarkable if the universe looked the same in every direction around us, but not at the other points of the universe. Now, there's a great deal in that paragraph that, as far as I'm concerned, you let it go in one ear and out the other. But you have here an admission from Hawking that we simply don't have evidence about that. Now, I'm not entirely opposed to people speculating about things when they don't have evidence for it. I think it's critical that they understand that the conclusion certainly cannot be very reliable, very trustworthy. But there's nothing particularly wrong in that, as long as the individual understands what he's doing, and as long as he doesn't pass off that speculation about something he has no information about as something other than what it is. The problem comes when you start with speculation and then through a series of steps, as we have noted, somewhere down the trail it is treated as though it is no longer speculation. And this is the case with most of these views of how a complicated universe can come from nothing. Now, there's another statement by Hawking that occurs on page 140 in that same book. the book titled A Brief History of Time. Now, page 140, the quote, "With the success of scientific theories in describing events," let me interrupt this, he uses exactly the right word here. Scientific theories do not prove, they do not explain. At best, they describe. He's exactly right about that. "With the success of scientific theories in describing events, most people have come to believe that God allows the universe to evolve according to a set of laws and does not intervene in the universe to break these laws. However, the laws do not tell us what the universe should have looked like when it started. It would still be up to God to wind up the clockwork and choose how to start it off. So long as the universe had a beginning, we could suppose that it had a creator. But if the universe is really completely self-contained, having no boundary or edge, it would have neither beginning nor end. It would simply be. What place, then, for the creator?" End quote. Now, you listen to the first part of that quote, and you may think, well, maybe Hawking is somewhere in the edges of his mind. He is dealing with this idea that there must be a creator for the universe. And that, as you understand, if you follow through the quote, is not his position at all. He simply said, well, yeah, you can suppose there's one if you want to. But if the universe is, as he says, no edge, no end, no beginning, then there's no necessity for a creator. But his comment I found interesting. Now, on page 280, quote, "Short of postulating some sort of action from outside the universe, whatever this may mean, the energy of the universe must continually lose availability. Change can occur only in one direction. With universes, as with mortals, the only possible life is progress to the grave." Now, this is not Hawking's comment. This is a comment by Sir James Jean. But it's important in the context we're talking about. We've talked about the fact that we do see directional changes in the universe, and that those directional changes are deterioration. And that means not only must it have an end, it also has to have a beginning. This was a comment he made in a book entitled The Universe Around Us, and I thought it was worth tossing in at this point. So we've seen from other well-qualified, renowned scientists their attempt to provide an answer to the question, how can nothing produce something, simply make no sense. And I think then it's important for those of us who accept the scripture to understand that we have there the only possible source of information about how what we see around us could have come into existence.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.